My name is Brett Yon, and I lead the ministry at the University of Nebraska and have been for a long time. And we have a staff of people from both Nebraska and K-State. And what we're going to do is we're going to have a discussion with you about how do you set up small groups, small communities that are open and encouraging people that aren't believers to come and be a part of that. And so the primary old guy from K-State is Dave Jivak here, who has been at K-State not as long as I've been at Nebraska. We won't get into years or decades or centuries here. This is Betsy Severin. She serves on staff at Nebraska. Carolyn Wenzel, who's at K-State. Jenny Snodgrass at K-State. And this is Ryan Brand at Nebraska. And Steve Gill at Nebraska. And today's his birthday. Yeah. When I saw him today, I thought he looked just a lot older to me. So he did not appreciate that. So I want to kind of lay a biblical foundation before we jump into this. And kind of, I think the way we'll do this is that the K-State folks will kind of talk about, this is sort of what small groups look like for how we see them set, because it's not the same thing. You'll see commonalities. And then the Nebraska folks will do that. So before we jump in, why don't we pray and ask God to help us. Father, thank you that you give us a chance to really be the light of the world on the campuses where we're from. And whether it's students that are commuters or students in the dorms or fraternity and sorority people, that God, you want us to take your light and your kingdom and your glory to these people. And I pray that there'd be something for everybody here today that strikes them, that makes sense to them, that they could apply on their campus. And those of us that are sharing in this sort of non-structured way, we ask that you'd bring to our mind stories, illustrations, things that we've learned that would help our other brothers and sisters here. For it's in Christ's name we pray. Amen. If you have your Bible, turn it open to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. And this is the chapter in the Bible where Paul really digs into the huge problem that the Corinthian church had of everybody speaking in tongues and disorder and all that kind of thing. And we're not going to dig into the speaking in tongues. This is not about how to get your group to speak in tongues, okay? This is about how to make things understandable to people. And that's part of his logic in dealing with the issue of speaking in tongues, that things need to be understandable. So look at 1 Corinthians 14, 24 and 25. And he's kind of approaching this thing from all different directions, trying to say, let's think about this thing. Let's think about what it's like for believers. Let's think what it's like for unbelievers. And he's using the word prophecy, not in the sense of foretelling the truth, like what's going to happen 50 years from now, but of forth telling the truth, just telling, this is the way it is. This is what's real. This is what's true. So verse 24, he says, but if an unbeliever or someone who does not understand comes in while everybody is forth telling, is prophesying, they're talking about the truth, he will be convinced by all that he is a sinner and will be judged by all. And the secrets of his heart will be laid bare, so he will fall down and worship God, exclaiming, God is really among you. Now, to me, that's a perfect description of what I would love to see people who don't know Christ, the reaction that they would have as a part of being a part of a small group on our campus. That they would come in, that it would be understandable to them what was going on. That it wouldn't be a study that you had to have some kind of theology degree to get into, but it would be understandable, and that the result would be realizing, you know what? I'm not like these other people. You know what? This faith that I had when I was confirmed, it doesn't mean much to me. You know what? I find in my heart something of wanting to really fall down and worship God. And so I think the question we're dealing with is not so much content, what do you go over and study, but how do you approach this thing? The structure. How do you build a small group so that when people are all along the spectrum of spiritual maturity, beginning with those that don't believe in God, all the way to those who, you know, have had Sunday school and Bible school coming out their ears, how do you build a group that really is accessible to this wide spectrum of people, is encouraging and helpful, and causes those who don't know Christ to sort of go, yeah, I want that. And so I think we've done an experiment in Lincoln and in Manhattan of building groups like this. And so I'm going to let Dave kind of kick off and describe what your groups are like. And you guys kind of take the discussion for 20 minutes. And you guys can ask them questions about their group. And then the Nebraska group will do a 20-minute thing. And then we'll have a fight and we'll vote to see who did the best, right? So, yeah, this is going to get interesting. Christian Challenge and Christian Challenge.
Yeah. Just as a background, I've been about 18 years at Kansas State, and the way we've done by our small groups during our first 10 to 12 years was very classical Bible studies. We gathered people who came in the fall who were interested. They usually were churched people. And primarily our small groups were made up of men and women who were some out of church backgrounds and already had made some commitment to follow Christ. So they're dominated by already Christ followers. And that's the way things went. And so every year we did evaluations, we would find that we just were not reaching very many people who had not known Jesus to make a point of commitment to following Jesus. So we thought something has to change in what we're doing. It just is not our strength. And it really is not our great strength now. But we've been in this process for 5 to 7 years, somewhere in there. Carolyn, I'm not sure if you were... Had we already made the switch when you came in? We had. So 7 years ago maybe is when we decided let's change how we're doing small groups. And it doesn't necessarily seem big at the time, but it did change sort of the whole mindset. This was not just a Bible study that we were going to do. We're going to create something that is a small group where people can come in and be a part of it, and it incorporates 4 different elements. It's an acronym. You learned one last night called SPLISH. Well, we had one which is not original with us. It's been used other places around the country. And it's called the LIFE group. And LIFE stands, there's 4 elements to a LIFE group. And I'm actually not the kind of our on staff, the LIFE group point person. But I can tell you those, and most of our students have picked up and learned those. But I'm going to go ahead and have Carolyn just share briefly what that LIFE acronym is, and then I might share a little bit more about how I have seen that change just our group dynamics here.
Yeah, I'm Carolyn, and this is my 3rd year on staff with Kansas State. So LIFE group, L stands for Learning Biblical Truth. The awkward moment of letting you guys write that down if you want to. And then I is for intercessory prayer. F is for fellowship. And then E is extending life to others. So we really desire to see all 4 parts of that be integrated into these life groups, these small groups. And normally there's often a tendency of strength. We do co-leading at K-State, which just provides some good accountability for the leaders, and then as well for us to kind of have a better understanding of what's going on in the groups. And with co-leading, it also can be a good thing if leaders have different strengths. So if one of the leaders is really stronger in evangelism and outreach, then they're able to provide that in the group rather than maybe the other leader is stronger in prayer or in fellowship or something like that. So co-leading is one way that we've seen, just a way to get all four of those parts integrated into the group. I think normally Christians can lean way, way heavy on the fellowship side and way, way not on the extending life to others. And this year, especially, I feel like, we've been really trying to encourage and push the extending life to others. And it's kind of come out in a few different ways for life groups. We've got one or two that are very specifically geared towards seekers, that are really went into the year praying for people to be in their group who were not believers. And one guy just has a huge heart for evangelism. And so inviting all of his buddies from class, all of his buddies from his fraternity, all of just, I mean, he just wants guys to come who are seeking. And that's what they geared the whole Bible study towards, was just hopefully introducing these guys to the Bible, giving them space to ask these questions, versus other groups that are very heavy on the side of strong Christians, been growing throughout college, but then can be a place to come and get encouragement and being sent back out to go back into their communities and continue to share and witness. And but then one other thing about life groups, we look at the difference between opened and closed life groups, which kind of goes into what Dave was talking about. We always want a life group to have an open environment, which means it's open to anyone else joining. Sometimes a closed life group, that's the group that looks like they've been together for a year or more, super, super close, really know each other, really, really just got that like awesome vibe together. I mean, it's kind of like a dream life group for some Christians, that you're in this group that you feel really, really safe and everything is awesome. But to someone wanting to come in, or if someone wants to invite someone, that's not that great of an environment. If you're like, oh, now we have a new person, that's not that great. Or, oh, but we were like this and we were just five and now we have six. I was even in a life group that was kind of getting sucked closer to that closed group when I was in college. And it's really hard if you start letting that group gather that mindset of this is just for us, rather than we need to continue to be outward focused, not just on this time is just for us or whatever, but making sure that you're keeping an open attitude in your group. But like they were saying, either for other believers to join or for non-believers, but having a welcoming, open group like that.
A couple of other things that, as Carolyn mentioned, we have leaders and co-leaders in our groups. We have a requirement that each leader and co-leader meets regularly with a staff person. One of the things that we do is helping them walk through whether those four elements are continually being lived out and what are the strong ones, what the areas of growth are. A few years ago in staff, we knew that evangelism was not a strong suit for any of us on staff, so we started a little process. We picked it up, I believe, from Jim Peterson's book, The Insider, and we started these what we called the Circle of Three. Who are three people in your circle that are not yet followers of Jesus that we can pray for? And we've been hearing about prayer last night and this morning, and that just started as a staff praying for these people. Well, we've passed that on to these small our life leaders and co-leaders, and we've asking them to begin praying for people in their circle, friends, whether they're class, whether they're from their hometown, whether it's from their living area. But we're trying to get them to be intentional just about meeting people and getting to know them and beginning to develop enough of a friendship where they can begin to pray regularly. Last month, we had all of our leaders together. We get them together every month for, there's 40-some, I don't know the exact number. Okay. But we get together every month and have a time usually for sharing and prayer, hearing updates. Not a great deal of training, but we want them to be together to continue to feed off of one another's and hearing the stories about their interactions. They began to share because we had set a prayer goal of seeing 50 people come to Christ this year, and we kind of wanted to know what have we seen as far as people moving towards that point of decision. Well, we just had a whiteboard up, and it said, give us names of people that you know have made that decision already or where they are in the process. We had something 12 to 13 names of people who ended up in already made that decision this semester. Then there was a column where there were, I didn't count how many were on the list. There were over 45 of people who were in process. And these are just from the leaders that were there that night. Not all were there, but you know, they hear people that we're praying for and we've had a chance to share with. And this is like one of the first times in the 18 years I've been there where it's like, wow, we have names, real people. We could put faces to them. We know where they are. And what has happened is it just seems like it's creating now a culture of people who are sensitive to what's going on around them, that they really actually do see the harvest out there of people. They see people and what their needs are, and they're building relationships and getting close enough to where they can begin to share the love of Christ with these people and begin to give them opportunities to ask questions. We have two guys who, just because of their interest in have this year, they started a, I don't even know what it's exactly called. It's just called Bike Night. It's called Bike Night. These guys love to ride bikes. That's their passion. Well, we give a lot of freedom for life groups to form however they want to. Well, these guys decide, well, let's just do it around biking. And we like to repair bikes. So they just started on a Tuesday night, inviting all of the friends that they knew that loved to do biking. Come over, we'll work on our bikes. I think they even did some bike polo. And when it was warmer out, they'd go out and do bicycle polo out on the tennis courts. And then they'd have a meal together and they'd have some discussions. It caught on and the word got out that the school newspaper did a big article about it. And, you know, it's like free advertising. Somebody heard about this that was going on, and they had 30 or 40 different guys that were coming to this. Most of them were not already believers. And they were giving opportunity to build relationships and share with them in a different type of a life group that was very focused on how do we extend life to others and have fellowship. So that was one of the ways they did it. In the fraternity that I'm involved with, a different way that it was happening there is one of the guys who leads a small group within the house was just concerned about how do I get into the lives of some of these people. And I said, well, I think you have the freedom here to go around in a very non-threatening way. You can just ask guys in the house, saying, hey, group of us are just praying for different guys in the house. What is something that we could pray for you about? You know, something that's going on in your life. And it helped to really bridge some divisiveness between the Christians in the house and the non-Christians. Because what they found was that everybody had something that they, sure, you're going to pray? Yeah, here, you can pray for this. They didn't try to share anything else with them, but it was focused around intercession, that life group. We want to begin praying for these people. And what we've seen in that house is that there has been more and more guys who have become awakened really to a life with Christ, and they've begun taking the steps and they're in beginning that road of following Jesus. So that's a couple of ways that it's looked like at Kansas State. And I don't know, have we gone our 20 minutes? You know, maybe there's something you've heard that you want to hear more about, that what we're trying to do. We're just in a learning process. The next thing we're trying to develop now is some sort of an evaluative tool that we can sit down with our life group leaders and see how are they doing in each of these four areas. Just as we've been trying to do with our staff, we're trying to now take it down to their level. But you know, our main thing is we're trying to create this kind of this mindset and this culture where they are embodying this as their own vision. Yeah.
Okay. Another thing. Sure. Thank you. Another thing, we're all for natural connection. So just like with these farmhouse guys, like these are guys in their house, they're naturally around them. This is part of their world, as one of our lingo. We use the word world not only to represent like the world as itself, but even the worlds that you're in at school. So farmhouse for these guys, that's one of their worlds. The cycling guys, cycling and cyclists, that's for sure one of their worlds. They've got passion in it. They invest time in it. And then another thing that we do is like ultimate frisbee. Every single Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, same field. Except when it's freezing, some people still play though. So, and that's attracted, sometimes we've had 100 people show up just to play, And there's been some awesome relationships that have been built through that. Another gal started leading a life group this year on her floor with freshmen. She's a junior still living in the dorms. And these freshman girls had tried out different life groups but just didn't really feel anything that really clicked for them. And they're from not church backgrounds. I don't know where any of them are at with official decisions to follow Christ, but they're definitely interested in at least having community. And so this girl saw that need and just said, I will lead you guys, and came to us for help and training, but she's just totally taken off on that. And all these things are exciting because it's just a complete natural, this is where I've got passion, these are the people that I'm around, this is where I want to invest time in. It doesn't feel like this awkward, there's those people way over there, I have no idea how to get there. And sometimes that, I mean, is definitely how it has to happen. But yeah, this is especially these just natural thinking about what's your circle, how can you start getting there more intentionally. And then we also really encourage partnership in that, having somebody else that can really be passionate about that with you, that can pray, you guys can pray together about it and go after it together and all that.
Yes. What do we do in when a group is getting together, or what do we do just individually? Or I'll mention how it means for me personally. As Ken was just talking in there about how men are very hands-on. I grew up on a farm. I also run a small roofing business in Manhattan, and I hire guys to work for me. But it has thrust me into a world of construction people. So there's two avenues I've taken. One is I've gotten to know a lot of people in the community, and that's where I build relationships with people with who aren't involved either in church or don't have a relationship with Christ. But I've had a lot of opportunities to share both with homeowners and with business people. That's on an individual level. It's not as a small group. I haven't really created a small group, but I'm building a circle of relationships around there. Now, I've also taken guys on service project trips, and actually we've used it on one trip. I believe Nebraska has a little bit more experience with this, but we opened it up to people who were not involved in our campus ministry. Had somebody that just, yeah, they joined it, and when they afterwards came back from the trip where we went to the Gulf for some work after Katrina, and this person wanted to get involved in the ministry in their very last semester, and they had about 3 weeks left in the, or I guess a month or so left in the semester, but because of the trip and being involved in this serving together, they were very interested and were open, and those last few weeks had several opportunities to share with them. We have one of the young ladies that's here at this conference this week who has been involved in the dance ministry, and you know more about her and what she's been doing. Do you want to share anything? Yeah. This is a little example of what she's done. Again, I'll let you talk first.
Okay. Yeah, she dance is one of her passions, and for even a couple of years in college, she kind of dropped off from it, feeling like maybe this is too much of my focus or giving too much time to it or whatever. But this year really jumped back into it, and she has had an incredible influence in the dance department. She's been able to work really closely to one of her professors and witness to him a ton. And she and her senior dance, actually at the end of last semester, where she got to choreograph her own pieces and stuff, she did four pieces, and it was the journey through her testimony. So the first piece was about like her growing up years, and then the second piece was about everything in life that's like pulling her in different directions and what she's going to choose. And then it was when she came to Christ, what that was like. And then the last piece was called like To the Ends of the Earth or something, and just about going out and continuing to share. And so she verbally explained the whole thing to her, all the girls and guys that were participating in that senior dance with her. And so that's another way that she's just using her natural, what she's involved in, her passions, to be a light and be an influence. And I mean, she made that choice to incorporate that. It wasn't, I mean, she could have easily just done whatever dance pieces she wanted to, but she saw this as being able to use it as an outreach for that. And also in answering your extending life question, that is a really hard part. I mean, honestly, that's probably my biggest weakness in leading life groups is the E. So there's all sorts of brainstorming happening. One is just what Dave talked about, the circle of three. So talking about your life, talking with your life group about who they are, reaching out to and praying for those people, keeping that open mindset and life group, not just being totally for us, but also, focusing on who we're reaching out to and stuff. I mean, I know I've had groups like try to get creative with like having a night of dinner and games, and it's open to inviting like their friends from class and stuff like that. So it's just kind of having to get creative, and normally, I mean, it's hard, honestly. I can be the first one to say that. So it's hard to keep that perspective alive when it's easy just to get sucked into the fellowship and the just community that's totally focused in like that.
So, you know, for us, one of our first steps that we decided was we had to get our students, as well as us, interacting and meeting people who were outside of the Christian circle or the huddle that Ken was talking about, because most of our relationships were still with people who were already Christ followers. So that's been our first step in the extending life, is we have to actually be out there mixing life and experiencing life with them. And then we have another step is inviting them to something where there's some other Christ followers around. We have things that coming up this next month, the men and women will both have separate events, and the men, we're just going to be doing some things around. And several of the guys said it was because of a men's event that they ever got involved with the group and came to Christ. One of the guys who's doing the bike ministry now said, that's how I came, you know, was because of that men's event that you do once a year. And so he's one on the planning team for it. It's not all that threatening. It's just on a Friday night and Saturday. We're going to have both a combination of some fun activities, not a great deal of content, but we'll have a speaker there who will share a little bit about, you know, the challenges of being a young man in today's world. And so there will be gospel content that will be shared at that. Usually for men, they will come to that before they actually commit to a small group that meets continuously. But when they do come into a small group, we have a number of them that just work through the Gospel of John. And that's been a study that we've used a number of years, just walking through, because there's content in a gospel for both those who are already Christ followers and those who are not yet Christ followers. There's something there for everyone, as Brett was talking about. And so we've used that. Sometimes there have been times where we had a testimony of one of our young internationals this semester who shared it had been a 3-year process of walking through the Gospels, being in part of different group events that were taking place, some of them fun events. But over the course of the past 3 years, they came to a point and made a commitment to follow Christ and then were baptized this fall. So we've used that as a content element. We also, our Thursday night meeting is a large group meeting, 250 to 300 students that will attend there. And there's a lot of worship focus with the music and even with the message, but it's still a fairly welcoming place for people to come into. And so, you know, we'll invite people to come into that. Some, you know, they haven't come for a year. They may be invited, but it gives another place to invite people to something that, okay, maybe they'll come at least once to it. So when you say extending life to others, it takes a lot of different shapes and forms. There's a lot of, we want to have as many doors as possible for them to enter into. And it may be through a specialized ministry, through a social event, through a service project. Had one of the young women that went on a service project 3 or 4 years ago showed up at a barn party. I had not seen her since that spring when she went on this trip that I took down there. But she just started sharing a little bit about what had been happening in her life and realized that she was now again open to talking more about a relationship with Christ. You know, still not sure that she's, you know, ready. She hasn't been back around too much, but it's like, you know, the door is open again. And so giving enough opportunities where they've interacted, where they feel comfortable enough that when life events start occurring, as it has in this young woman's life, now she's seeking again, that she knows that she's welcome here. And so that's what we've tried to create with both life groups as well as with our ministry.
Great. You'll be able to ask questions in a little bit. But I love the external focus that these guys have been talking about. That's just huge, I think, and part of what all of our ministries, we would want all of our ministries to have that focus. In Lincoln, what we call our groups are EDGE groups. It's not an acronym. It's that we just want them to be on the edge. And as we designed these groups a number of years ago, it's like, why would we use EDGE? And so someone said, well, we want to be near the edge of things. That makes sense. Someone said, oh, remember that story where Jesus, the woman touched the edge of his garment and she was healed? And it's like, okay, that's fine. So our students are a little more cynical than the K-State students. They wouldn't let us get by with an acronym, whatever you call that. And they didn't even know what it was. But anyway. So we began these groups knowing that our particular ministry tends to attract the not yet convinced person. If someone comes to our campus, there's a huge NAV ministry and a huge crusade ministry. And if you're a card-carrying Christian who's got your umbilical cord and you're wanting to plug in someplace, then that's probably where you're going to end up. And you know what? That's a great thing. I'm glad that those ministries exist. And we aren't going to try to duplicate what those ministries are doing. So our question was, okay, God, why do you have us here? And why do you keep bringing us these people who are not like the people that are meeting over there? That they don't know their Bible. They may not even have a Bible. And then what do we do with them? And so I think the crowd that God brought us forced us to think about, how do you group people without it being an intensive verse by verse using the Greek Bible studies that some of the groups do? And so we've had so much fun figuring this out. And I think we really love the way God has led us in developing these EDGE groups. And so one of the first things that we try to teach our EDGE leaders, and we have more than two people as leaders. We figured we need three or four people to lead. And if we have three or four people willing to lead a group, then we've got a group. Because then those people can bring people to the group. What seemed to be discouraging when we only had two people to lead is that nobody would come to their group. So we solve that by having a group. We start with a group of leaders. So we have three or four people, and the training for leadership actually happens in the group by those people leading the group. They train up new leaders. So in April this year, we'll say to our staff and our student leaders, who do you know that's ready to be a leader next year that we can invite to our monthly leadership meeting and say, we want you to be a part of this leadership team next fall? And so that's kind of where our leadership comes from, is through people in the small groups who are training to be a part of the leadership team in the group. And you can ask questions about all this later. We have a structure, and I have a piece of paper I'm going to give you of the six things we try to do in these groups and what that looks like. Before we get to that, though, I want to go to a bigger thing than what we do, which is our values. So I'm going to ask, we have four values, and the first value is real. And I'm going to ask Betsy to describe what is real. What do we mean when we say real in a group?
I guess when we're talking about real, we're asking people to come to the group and leave their masks at home. A lot of times, maybe in a typical Christian small group, a person might come and like, well, I want to really impress everybody with what I know about the Bible. And we don't really want to have any of that because we're trying to attract people who don't know anything about the Bible. So we're asking people to be real as far as, you know, not putting on any pretense of I don't know, being really spiritual or something. We're also asking them to be real when they're sharing prayer requests, you know, like, you know, don't, I don't know, don't share requests about things that are going on in your life. Like, you don't need to necessarily just pray for, oh, you know, this person is sick or this person has this going on. So that's a big value we want. We'd rather people be real and authentic than pretty, I guess.
Yeah. And I was talking about this to a group of students once in another state, and was talking about the whole issue of the importance of believers being real. This one young man got pretty upset. He said, well, you're asking me to expose, like, my weaknesses, like, where I'm struggling to have Christ to be enough with a non-Christian in the room? And I said, yeah. And this guy said, well, he's going to think Jesus isn't enough. And I said, well, is he? And he said, no. And I said, well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about being real. And he said, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do it. See, we're trained in church training to not be real. That somehow we've got to give God a good impression. And if something has happened to me today that I'm really upset, the last group that ought to know about it should be my small group, because I'm the leader. Does that make any sense to you? That doesn't make it. I mean, I don't want that kind of religion, okay? And I don't think other people do. I think what we try to train our students is that when you come to that group, whatever's going on in you, between you and God, whether it's good, bad, or ugly, that you let other people in on that. And so real is one of our values that we try to have with our leaders and we have in that group. And we found for people that aren't yet convinced that the real thing really disarms them, because they have Christians in this little category of being perfect, got it all together kind of people. And when they get in a group where it's real, it's kind of like, wow, that's amazing. Maybe there's something for me here. Another aspect of the group that value is the whole issue of being interactive. And I think K-State's talked a lot about the interactive thing. But I'm going to ask Ryan to speak to interactive. What do we mean when we challenge a small group and leaders of the group to be interactive?
Basically what that means is just to enter into one another's lives, kind of going off the real part. I mean, once we really know what's going on with everyone there, then it's like, well, how can I come alongside and help you? How can I be the face of God and bring that to you? It's also kind of the fellowship aspect. Like, I mean, I don't know, say I enjoy watching football, so I'd probably invite someone to come do that with me or something like that. It's just part of our life, like the biking thing. Like, that's something too. Like, I like to golf as well, so probably invite a student or somebody to come golfing with me, something like that. So,
as a leader of a group, if someone shares something that is really dark or maybe upsetting to them, as a leader, because you hold interactive important, what do you do as a leader?
I just ask them more questions about that, instead of getting like awkward and quiet and like they said something wrong or something. But yeah, giving them the avenue, like, it's all right to feel that way, but let's shed some truth on that, or let's bring that out in the light and talk about it, sort of thing. So help them understand it more, too, by asking questions about it.
Okay, great. So we have real, interactive, and then we have the whole issue of being dependent on God and dependent on one another. So I'm going to ask Steve, who's the newest one to our staff. Steve's just been with us since August, came in June, and has never experienced edge groups before. But Steve, the whole issue of developing dependency on God and that kind of thing, how have you seen that played out in edge groups?
Well, I would say that, and just like as Ryan said when he's talking about interactive and how it kind of ties into being real, I think that being dependent kind of, it's kind of interwoven in with everything else that you see with that group. You see that all of these things are woven together, is that people are real, they take their masks off, and as they enter into each other's lives. And once that happens, there's this realization with people that, you know, we as a group, we aren't in this whole thing of life alone. And there's a strong bond in this, like a sense of dependence. That's why it's called dependence, obviously. But you know, it's as we as we enter into life and we and as we learn more about our stories, you know, the struggles that we have, the you know, just the things of life that we can identify with, we as a dependent group of people step in and take an active role by praying, by you know, by serving one another, by coming alongside and just really journeying with those people, I guess is really the way that I would word it, and just bearing one another's burdens, and just that whole idea is that we are not in this alone, and which again is a lot easier to enter into once you have that sense of realness and authenticity. So again, there's that whole interwoven aspect of edge groups together. So that's how that kind of fits in.
The last one is inspiring. You know, one of the things that we feel like people need is inspiration. In some ways, they need more inspiration than they knew information. Isn't that true of you? Like you know more than what you're doing? And you need to be inspired to do what you already know to do. And so one of the values we have is that this would be an inspiring hour during the week where people would leave there. Maybe they drag themselves there or they get drugged there. We do have a drug ministry. You drag people to these groups. And so they are there reluctantly. And our hope is that as they leave the room, that every person would say, you know, I'm really glad I came tonight. I really needed this. This inspired me in some way. And as we get into these parts of that hour meeting, hour and 15 minutes meeting, then you'll see maybe each one of these parts could be inspiring. So Steve, I'll ask you to pass this out. And I'll start with the first aspect of this and then have the rest of you guys pick up parts. Food is one of the parts of the deal. And we're not talking about elaborate food. We're talking about Oreos, pop. We're talking about stuff you can buy at the quick shop. Huh? Not your group has meals. That's right. They make meals. And you see, when like someone that's not a believer, when they come to something they've never been to, something common like food really sets them at ease. It's like you can put food in their hand, give them something to drink, and it's kind of like, okay, that's what everybody's doing. You're just kind of doing small talk. And so we have food available before, during, and after the small group. Now, I heard of this a group that was meeting up in Wisconsin that's a wet campus, and a small group had beer as one of their beverages. We do not promote that on a dry campus. But the group seemed to enjoy it and grew. But, yeah, what's the dynamic there? So, anyway, the whole issue of food, and that's a way of welcoming people and serving people. And so I'm going to go in the same order. And Betsy, which of these do you want to talk to? What are you most excited about? Okay.
We start our small groups with an icebreaker. Usually that takes the form of some sort of question. In the beginning of the semester, it's usually a question that's pretty simple, like what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? But as the group gets to know each other, you might have a little bit more, a deeper sort of thing, like what's the best Christmas gift you ever got? Or, you know, what are you most worried about this week? That sort of thing. And the icebreaker also might take the form of, like a game or, you know, some sort of interactive activity to kind of set everybody at ease and, help them to, enter into and start to enjoy the small group setting.
And how long is an icebreaker? An hour and 15 minute meeting, how long?
Probably about 5 minutes, but they've been known to go much longer.
Yeah, like 45. All right, you have to watch that. And that's one of the things you train your leaders, because we feel like these things you're going to be doing the rest of your life, no matter what form your group takes, these six functions are a part of being an effective group leader. So if we can train our leaders to say, hey, the icebreaker is not the point. You know, coming up with the coolest, funniest icebreaker that's ever been had on Earth, that's not what we're trying to do. we're just trying to get people to talk, to share something. Someone that doesn't know anything about Christ, when they come to a group, they're not expecting to talk because they don't know anything. But they do know, like, what did I do over break? They know that. Or they need help. All right? And so that's what you would talk to them about. And so, Ryan, which of these do you like?
Worship.
Okay.
Yeah, one thing for me, I actually kind of, I think it was my sophomore year in college was when Nebraska, they first started these edge groups. And the only thing I was used to was Sunday school and just a normal Bible study, just read a verse or chapter and then discuss it. One thing I really liked about worship was it seemed like it was more of a creative outlet to and different ways of seeing how everyone in the group experienced God. Like when I was first there, the leaders were really into movies. So I remember watching, we didn't watch the whole movie, but usually we'd see a scene from a movie. And like I think one was The Last of the Mohicans, where like these three people were working together, just kind of like the Trinity and something, kind of, it was just a way to see that visually. And it really got me thinking, like, well, what's ways that I experience God through music, through art, through movies? And especially for someone who didn't grow up in the church, I mean, they probably spent a lot more time at movie theaters and things and haven't necessarily thought, like, oh, does this say anything about God or what's that? So seeing God kind of in the arts and through that. And sometimes we'll read a verse and worship him that way. And a lot of times the times where it can get in kind of a rut is where, like, it seems like sometimes people just bring music and don't really explain. But the point is, like, to kind of bring something that where God has really spoken to you and say what you see, and then go around and everyone kind of says, yeah, well, how did I experience God through this? And most of the time, it's not exactly the same way, but each person, experienced something different. I was going to say something back to you know you're having a good edge group when the students remember the values. Like when Steve was talking about dependent, I always remember a story from, I think it was like the third edge group I was leading. And there's this one student still in our ministry sometimes a day who he's never been able to drive a car and he's never had a driver's license. So he always needed a ride everywhere. But this one time, I think it was in February, like it was pretty cold out, below freezing, up in Nebraska. And he decided to walk like 30 blocks or something to Walmart or something. And I don't know, someone found out this story and it was funny when we got to edge group, everyone's like, why weren't you dependent? Like they were instantly on that value. Like why didn't you call one of us? Like we could have easily taken you there and all this stuff. So like, you know, it's a successful group when those values are in their head and they're calling others to live by them. So.
Yeah, and the worship has taken a lot of different forms. And like Ryan said, is whoever's leading worship, you ask them, what has really touched you? What has God used to allow you to worship him in the last week or two? Could you bring a little piece of that to this group? And people bring a lot of cool and sometimes strange things to the group that it's like, whoa. Wow, that's totally cool. I remember one girl one time was leading a group I was in, the worship component of this, and I don't think she was a believer. And so she did this thing of, she brought a song, and it was kind of a new agey song, and we'll talk about how you keep things like from this like this happening. And she said, I want everyone to just kind of sit on the floor and relax, and I want you to listen to this song. So I'm thinking, okay. And then she starts narrating through the song, you know, think of this and think of that. And it's like, wow, this is interesting. And we've learned through the years, you know, when you ask different people to take different sections of this, and that's what happens, is that you would say to someone, at the end of a meeting, like your leadership team leads these different components like 5 or 6 weeks during the semester. And then they said, would anyone want to take food next week? And so this new guy, oh, I'll take food. Does anyone want to take worship? Yeah, I'll take worship. Well, what's really important when someone has never done something before is that one of the leaders would sit down with them with this page. And on our website, we have lots of pages on this stuff, and this is just sort of a cheat sheet that I gave you, that there's a whole page on worship that you would go over with the person who's going to lead worship so that they would understand the direction and the intent of this. And so that you get students teaching other students about how to lead this group. So that's a component you need to know. Steve, what part do you want to talk about?
Okay. Yeah, and with the discussion, normally what happens is the person who's leading discussion, they will come to the time with a passage, you know, if it's a passage that they like or something that's challenged them, or it maybe even sometimes with something that is maybe controversial, not so much to bring it to debate over it, but just something that to bring to people's attention. It's like, wow, have you guys ever seen this? What do you guys think about this sort of thing? And so they bring the passage to their group to discuss it. And you know, normally the things that are gone over are things like, what didn't you understand about the passage? What are some of the things that you liked? What are some of the things that you don't like? What are the things that you've learned about God from this passage? And I think one of the cool things about discussion is that it's very open and honest. I mean, when you ask questions like, you know, what don't you understand? It's more than, okay, here's this passage. What does it mean to you? It's like, well, I'm reading this and I really don't understand it. You know, what meaning can we get from something like this? So I think that kind of also helps facilitate in getting other people involved and, you know, just looking at it. And, with the discussion, it's not necessarily just limited to a certain set of questions. Sometimes they're tangents, and that's okay. Just as long as they're, you know, that people are really interacting with the text and just really talking about it in a meaningful way. I was going to say something else, but I forgot. But that's really the gist of discussion. And
how long does discussion last?
Discussion can last 15 to 20 minutes, I would say. Around that time. Oh, this is what I was going to say. I was going to say it's as far as bringing something to Edge Group to actually discuss. I mean, it could be whatever passage you'd like, but there's also the freedom within our groups to kind of go along a theme, and that's what our Edge Group. I co-lead with Ryan here, and we've actually kind of gone a different direction where we kind of have we're actually going through a book, but somebody still leads discussion from a, you know, particular passage within the book as we go along. But, you know, so there's some degree of freedom as far as, you know, well, you can just do it where whoever's leading can bring whatever they want, or collectively as a group, you can agree, well, let's go through this book together. And then whoever's turn it is to lead discussion, they can lead the discussion on whatever chapters we're doing. So that's kind of some of the options that you have in doing discussions.
Okay. I'll take vision. And we added vision like a year or two into this because we realized that the drift into the holy huddle is so easy. And so the vision is something that people, that we ask someone every week to cast a vision for why are we doing what we're doing. And so they'll talk about what it is do I like about this group. What is it that we're doing that I think everybody else needs? And the vision thing, our hope is that it will remind the group, this is why we exist. It's not just for us, but it's for other people. It's to be interactive. It's for our values. I remember one of the first groups we were putting together, a beta group, I guess you'd say, as we were experimenting with these, there was a non-Christian guy in it. And one week he said, well, I want to take vision. It's like, okay, Bob. So Bob took vision. And Bob showed up with a movie clip to do vision, and it was from Happy Gilmore. And it was a scene where Happy Gilmore is learning to golf or something with a hockey thing. And it was a hilarious scene. Everybody was just laughing. I'm just thinking, okay, that's funny. but Bob said this. He said, you know what, guys? I've never played golf. I've only played hockey, And you guys are teaching me how to play golf. And every week I come here for a golf lesson. It's really helping me. And Bob is a Christ follower today. Bob gives donations to our ministry financially. And he started off as a hockey player, right? But, you know, and when a group hears that from someone that is not yet a believer, what does that do to the group? It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what we're all about here. And when Bob graduated from college, I was not sure he was a believer. It was one of the most difficult graduations. And I had sat down with him in the union and gone through the bridge illustration for the umpteen time and said, Bob, have you yet made this commitment? It's like, no, I'm not there. Why? You want to go, why? You know. And he got married, moved to Kansas City, and he's come to make a commitment to Christ. So when you have unbelievers in your group, don't think that they're going to just come to Christ. He was in a group for 4 years, and he didn't come to Christ, but later he did. And I think we just got to have that perspective. You know, your list of folks in the middle, your students need to know, hey, we're going to keep them on the list for 6 years, 10 years, until they come to faith. We're going to pray for them. We're going to sow. We're going to cultivate them. Let's see. We have worship, prayer, and Betsy, why don't you talk about prayer?
Yeah, we have prayer in the group, which it's, you know, kind of natural. If you have, you're doing all these things, of course, you're going to want to be praying for each other as well. And so someone leads prayer every week, and it's pretty open-ended. Prayer might look like, you know, share a prayer request and then pray for the person on the left. We've had people bring information about unreached people groups, and we've prayed for unreached people groups. We've had, you know, kind of, you know, the sky's the limit as far as prayer is concerned. We've prayed for people that we know that aren't Christ followers. One of the more, I guess, you can be as creative as you want with that. Prayer's pretty self-explanatory, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was in a group where a non-believer said, I'll do prayer next week. And it's like, okay, so somebody met with the unbeliever and explained to them this is what we're doing and why. And so he thought about it, and the next week came, and he said, okay, today for prayer, we are going to do Thanksgiving prayer today, and we're going to go around the circle, and we're going to say out loud to God what we're thankful for the person on our left, what we're thankful for about that person on our left. Oh, my gosh. You know, everybody high-five this guy. You did great leading prayer. You know, I did. Yeah, you might have the gift. We don't know. You know? And so, wow. But these groups are fun, and I would say every group is completely different because different people bring different things. It's like a potluck dinner every week, but they share the same values, and the leaders are involved in each other's lives. And our monthly meeting is more of a training meeting where we're training people in our leadership how to be better leaders for life than it is more of a fellowship and sharing type deal. So Q&A, what questions do you have about both of these groups? I don't think they're that far apart. I think the K-State group offered more vision and we kind of offered more structure. Which is kind of odd because our ministries typically aren't this way. It's usually the other way. Yeah. Yeah. Let me give you the website. It's www.unlchallenge.com and go to resources. There'll be a little tag at the top. unlchallenge.com. UNL, University of Nebraska, Lincoln, not unleaded challenge. Yeah, Dave. Part of our... Yeah, what do you guys say about that?
I think part of it.
This is a question about how do you keep the group from becoming ingrown if it's doing this kind of real sharing.
I guess one of our unspoken values is that of multiplication. So I'm just trying to keep that value, especially in front of the leadership team. I'm saying, like, you know, when we or another thing that we do is our the Edge Group leadership team meets on a weekly basis to pray for the group and just to talk about what's going on in their lives. And we try to keep that vision in front of them, you know, like, who is it you can ask to be part of this group? You know, how can we get more people to be part of this group? Because ultimately the goal of the group is we want to, you know, bring new leaders and be able to multiply the group. So I think vision casting is one of the main ways.
Yeah, one of our goals this year is to multiply one of our groups that the past few years we haven't seen the groups multiply. And this year we're praying that one of our groups would multiply and we could really throw a party and celebrate that. And I think it may happen to the Monday night group. So, okay, other questions? Another question, yeah. When do the groups meet? So, Ryan O., you've been a part of more groups than anybody.
We usually set a specific time. Like, I know at Nebraska, it's usually Monday and Tuesday night, I think. We've also gone back and forth. Sometimes we've had co-ed groups. Sometimes we've had just guy groups and girl groups. Usually, I'd say the way it takes now is we kind of get an idea of the main group of people who are going to be in it. Then we, like, so what? Does this time work for you? And if that doesn't, then we try and work it out and move it. And then, yeah, we kind of ask them, like, if you know some other people, do you think this time would work for them too? So it's ended up where it's usually been Monday and Tuesday nights, I guess. So
we have two guys on this trip who are sons of alums. That was a new curse word for me like a few years ago. You don't always have good experience with sons of alums. But I have two guys that have come to this event here who have never been to anything we've done on campus. They're freshmen. They're in fraternities. And my prayer for them this week is that they'd be willing to get together and form an edge group and that we would form a group around those two guys and that I'd pull in maybe a couple of other leaders and I would help them to reach their circle of friends like you guys were talking about, their world, and develop a spiritual community out of that. And so during the semester, there might be groups that will form like this. Like you see, here's some people that are just not fitting. We love these guys. We want them to know Christ, and we want to help them and other people like them. When will they meet? Probably some afternoon or maybe noon someday. And we'll do it in the union building around tables, or we'll find us a room someplace and begin to talk and open our hearts and be real and interactive and dependent and try to do something inspiring. Okay, other questions? Okay, over here and then back here and then up here. Will. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, the question is, how do you invite people that aren't yet Christ followers? Any takers? Please, Dave. Yeah.
One of the ways that we have done it, and this is, works in Kansas, I don't know if it would work in Nebraska, but there's still an interest.
I like your shirt, by the way.
You do? It's an Iowa State color.
Oh, wow.
I'm an Iowa State grad. But there still seems to be a fair amount of interest, even among people who have limited church background, to be familiar with what is the story of the life of Jesus. So a lot of our life groups will go through, we're reading through one of the accounts of the life of Jesus. So when we invite some people in, we let them know what we're studying, but also that we want to have time to enjoy one another. We'll pray for one another and get to know one another as well. So that we're upfront about that part. And some are just, yeah, they're interested. Internationals especially, they seem to have an interest in that as well. So when we invite
we let them know that.
Okay. Ryan?
I was just going to say, a big thing is like some of those other outside events, like having a men's and women's event and having them come to that. Or like, I can think of one thing our ministry does is we've been passing out snow cones right before school year starts. And I think this year we had like one international student who just sat there for a while and a few other students who just sat there. And then we're like, hey, do you want to come to our like introductional meeting? And we let them know we were a Christian group and it said Christian Challenge right on our snow cone thing. But I think one thing I also usually say, like, Edge Group is, it is like the old Bible study model, but it's not necessarily your traditional Bible study as well. So I've definitely told people that when I've invited them. So they definitely know it is, yeah, a Christian event, like sort of thing, I guess, sort of thing.
Yeah, we're going to have snow cone booth in January too. Only we're not going to have to buy the ice. Yeah, pickup lines for Edge groups. I think if you call your group an Edge group, say, hey, I've been thinking, I wonder if you'd be interested in going to an Edge group with me, then what are they going to say? What's that? So then that then gives me a chance to say what it is. It's a group of guys, or it's a co-ed group of people who get together. They get to know each other better. And part of the time we look at the Bible and some passage in the Bible and we try to figure it out. And that's what it is. And so we don't try to make it be more than what it is or different from what it is. But I think to have a name instead of Bible study, I think that's a pretty toxic name. Because it implies you've got to know something about the Bible if you're going to study it. And so life group, edge group, fusion group, whatever you'd want to name it something and then use that name in your pickup lines, okay? Okay, you had a question back here. Oh, good question. When would you multiply a group? We're thinking when it gets to be about 8 people, you multiply. And if you have a leadership group of 3 or 4, then your goal is to have 3 or 4 people who can multiply and be leaders of that group. And the semester break is a good time to do that because people's schedules change. And when you're starting up the school year, that's a good time. So, good question. And, Will, you had a question.
This is more for the K-State crew, just the concept of the life group. When does the life group become more, because I think you guys touched on a little bit, when does the life group become more specialized in, like, intercessory prayer or fellowship or when are they more general? Or I guess was I getting the wrong impression of what a life group is? Are there times where they're more specialized in certain areas of the life?
Jenny, do you want to answer that?
Okay. I don't.
I'll stand here.
Okay. I think it kind of depends on, you just kind of have to know your audience. And so it takes more than just seeing them once a week, but spending time with them. I love getting together with the girls in my life group and going one-on-ones and saying, where would you like to grow? Where do you see a need in your life? Or and sometimes they don't even know that. I work mostly with freshman girls. They're not really, no offense to freshmen. But, I mean, they learn to be self-aware as they go through college. So I think it just kind of depends. Like, you try to incorporate it through it all, but just kind of seeing where they need to grow too. So there's not like really like a formula there, but just simply knowing them.
So there are times where your life groups look more like a traditional Bible study, and there are other times where your life groups look more like maybe a prayer group or a support group in that area.
Generally, yeah. Or I think we always kind of have it, we always want to do like a book of the Bible.
Yeah.
We try to veer away from like picking out a book, that somebody wrote, but we try to stick with the Bible, and then that'll just kind of maybe that would focus on prayer or focus on the life of Christ or living in community or evangelism, extending life to others. So maybe we'd focus on a certain part of the Bible that's on evangelism and then just talk about how we can be reaching out to other people. Or so, I mean, even we do prayer and learning biblical truth, and, I mean, it all kind of goes through it because we're talking with each other, we're praying together, and we're learning about the Bible, and then we're encouraging each other. So it kind of all just kind of blends together through, like, at least one study, and then, like, hanging out outside of that, too, with inviting people and stuff. So
that's a great answer. You did great. And what we've done is we've had separate groups do book studies, but we've tried to really encourage people to be in an edge group, and then sort of an extracurricular activity would be to do a book study, Wild at Heart or what, Blue Like Jazz, captivating studies like that. So we would sure be with you guys saying the Bible really needs to be in the middle of the group and not on the periphery. Okay, yeah.
What's like the next step beyond life groups? Let's say if someone becomes a Christian, joins a life group, what's the next step beyond?
Oh, yeah. It's one-on-one with people. It's like learning to be a leader. You know, our desire is that every person would have the opportunity to learn how to lead while they're in college. And so that would be one of the things. And there are a lot of other opportunities for people to put together party. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff going on in ministry that doesn't have to be just the life group that people can help with to pull the ministry off. Do you want to say anything to that, Dave?
I understood the question a little bit. We used to have an way it was structured at Kansas State, maybe similar to the way it was at OU. There were ministry teams. So people almost saw that there was a gradual step up and, hey, you want to get to that level of a ministry team where a staff leads it. So we jump through certain hoops to get there. We've just kind of standardized everything that people are just in life groups. That's the process of growing with Christ. Some life groups are led by staff people, and others are led by the students. But there will be one-on-one mentoring that takes place regardless. We just don't try to separate out life groups and then have ministry teams now. So that was the change we made. I think that maybe that helps answer the question that you had.
Is one of those steps teaching the one-on-one discipleship thing? So, you know, I'm in Michigan State with Larry Woods. I've been discipled by Larry. He teaches me how to disciple this freshman. I teach that freshman how to disciple the freshman behind them. How much do you, either you guys at your states do that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's all of our leaders, co-leaders are in one-on-one relationships with somebody on staff, and we're passing on that. One of the things that we ask of all of our leaders is that they at least invest in one person. And we're doing a lot of our training takes place in that one-on-one time. We don't do it in our leadership community like Nebraska does. That's more for the community we're celebrating, we're praying, and we want them to forge an identity that we're in this together, that they encourage one another. And so it's more, our interactive part is the leadership community interacting. We do some training with them at the beginning of the year and several days together before the semester or the year begins. But our one-on-one time is where most training takes place, and then at a couple of conferences. So we're passing on the one-on-one part, but it's one element of them growing as disciples, disciple makers, and advancing God's kingdom.
Okay, well, thanks. I think it's time for lunch. Hope you enjoyed the group. I enjoyed everything except the Iowa State comment. That, like, is going to give me nightmares tonight. And so, who won that game? Let's pray together. God, thank you that we can have fun and that the groups can just be groups where we really do life on life and forge friendships that last way beyond college and see life transformation. Help everybody here to carry away something that blesses other people. For it's in your name we pray. Amen.